Welcome everyone to the Proven Knowledge Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Church. I'm a music producer from Northeast Ohio. I began this weekly interview series to give you different perspectives from artists, producers, engineers, and other individuals in the music industry. In each episode, we touch on not only what has helped the person succeed, but we also touch on what has shaped them into the person that they are today. I hope you're able to gain some real proven knowledge from the show, and that it helps elevate you on your own journey to success as well. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to episode 188 here on the Proven Knowledge Podcast. Today, I welcomed a Massachusetts native. He's a podcast host and an MC. His name is Soma79. I was on his podcast called the Articulate Ox Podcast back in November. We actually met through my good friend King Champs, who I've had on this show as well in the past. And Soma79 is someone who's doing a lot of cool things for artists. He joined the show today to discuss how he initially got into hip hop, how it's been a part of his life really since a young age, you know, just being a fan of different artists. And he talked about taking a break at one point, doing about 10 years worth of just drawing and, you know, learning that passion, another artistic side of, you know, his life and what he does, and then being able to focus back on music around the time of the pandemic, jumping back into things. Talked about, you know, the importance of sharpening your tools again after you take a break from things like that. Talked about all the projects and different things he has lined up for 2024, which I think is going to be super awesome. And I just look forward to collaborating with him more in the future. You know, I think what he's doing in his brand, everything he's done on social media, all the releases, and just his skills as an MC are super, super impressive. And I hope you guys enjoy this one as always. So without further ado, let's get into it. All right, well, welcome everyone to episode 188. Here on the Proven Knowledge Podcast. Today I have a guest. I was just on his podcast a few weeks ago, the Articulate Ox Podcast. This guy's a great MC as well, does a lot of cool things. I love his brand. Out of Massachusetts, please welcome Soma79. How you doing, man?
Fantastic. How you doing today?
Dude, doing great. Like I said, you know, I'm happy to have you on the show today. I know, you know, we got connected through your show initially, and to be able to have you on, you know, my podcast a few weeks later, you know, I'm excited to kind of flip the script, you know what I mean, a little bit, and know more about you. So to start off every episode, you know, we have the guests give some background, you know, how long have you been doing music? How did you get into it initially? Just some basic info, you know, for those that might not know you and what you do.
Word, man. Yeah, I'll try to keep this brief because I kind of got a long story, but for me, hip hop was born in the back of the school bus listening to Eazy-E and Beastie Boy tapes, and I was like third, fourth, fifth grade, probably too young to be listening to that stuff, but no one was there to really stop it. So I just listened to hip hop. I was like one of the only kids that listened to hip hop, because even the other kids back then grew out of it, but I was the only one, and literally to the point that I'd be teased over, which seems ridiculous now. But like, I always stuck with it, never really thought of myself as being a rapper. I always thought I was going to be Evan Dando from the Lemonheads, because I always thought I was going to, like, be a singer, but that didn't work out. So I was like, all right, well, it's time to get back to rapping. And went to film school at Boston University and kind of planned on doing that, but I really decided afterwards, after we made a few short films and had a little bit of success, it wasn't really for me. And I was then I was like, fuck it. Can I swear on this?
Yeah, you're all good, man.
I was like, fuck it. Like, I've always wanted to rap. Like, no one's telling me that I can't. It felt like I was telling myself that I couldn't for a long time. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, you know, I might have been in the wave of people like Eminem and like Atmosphere and Aesop Rock, where somebody of my skin complexion, like copyright. It's like, maybe I felt like I'd gotten some permission, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, it just felt like I was always a good writer, and I always was very nervous speaking in front of people. So it felt also to me like a challenge. And I'm like, if I can do this, I'll overcome a lot of my fears. Mm-hmm. That's what like the first half of my career was really about, is I knew that I had like nothing. I knew I had some decent writing, and I knew I had some friends that could make some beats, but it was all about overcoming fears really for me. I didn't really have many ambitions to really make it. I just wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm. And where did, go ahead.
I was going to say then, eventually, like, I did that for about 10 years. We played all around Boston. Some of the venues opened for people like Onyx and, like, Warren G and R.A. the Rugged Man and, like, all these acts that would come to town. But, like, and then eventually, like, I just I had a family member get sick, and I just took some time off, and I decided I wanted to draw instead, and I just never went back for 10 years. Like, I just became an artist, like a physical artist. I would do portraits. I would do all this stuff, paintings. And then during the quarantine, I got the itch back, and I was like, all right. I felt like I had some unfinished business, and then I was like, I've always wanted to do some – I was, like, looking at a bucket list stuff, and I was like, I've always wanted to do songs with people like Elza and Raz Cass and, like, Esoteric and Czarface, and I'm like – these dudes are probably sitting at home, not able to tour. It's like, this is the time to do it. It's like, I have the time and I want to do it again. And they probably could maybe use a few bucks. And it worked out great. I was able to record songs, some of my favorite hip hop acts. And that's part of an album that I'm dropping next year called Dripping Songs for Children. So hopefully that wasn't too long winded.
That's perfect, man. And I got to say, you know, I admire your love for hip hop, especially because it's great to meet someone that has that as well. And just knowing that, you know, it's been involved since the beginning for you, at least it seems like for a very long time, you just always kept involved. Like you said, you found another passion in doing art, drawing, things like that, but you also still have music involved. Like, it's never left. And I think that's super awesome, man. And to be able to do what you're doing in the podcast as well, which is super cool. And we're going to get into that in a little bit as well. You brought up a good point about getting back into music primarily during like the COVID times, during that time. So, like, what do you think was a big challenge for you during that time to kind of get back into doing it? Was it a challenge, or because you already had the background before, it was more easy to pick it back up and kind of just go from where you left off? Like, how do you feel about that?
What I did is I did something that I'll sometimes do is I'll kind of box myself into a corner, whereas I hadn't recorded a song in about 10 years. And I reached out and I was like, you know, I want to do this. I want to do a song with Esoteric from Czarface. I just reached out to him, negotiated a price, sent him a check. Check. What year is this? Like, sent him money digitally, like a human being living in this century.
Not a physical check.
And he just sent me back a verse, and I'm like, okay, well, now I've invested something in this. I'm certainly not going to let this Esoteric verse not go to use. And the beat I sent him isn't even close to the one that we used. But I'm like, okay, now I've committed myself. Whether, and that verse is still not out. It's on a song with him and Cool Keith and Aztec and Hybrid Thoughts. So that's coming out next year with this cool video that may or may not involve puppets, but we'll talk about that another day. Then I was like, all right, well, I have to do this. And it took me a while. Like, I hadn't, it's funny, like, the gears of rap slowly, when I stopped, it slowly went to a halt. To eventually, I was still thinking of rhymes and kind of thinking of it until eventually I stopped doing that anymore. And I wasn't like rapping in the shower to myself. And then I had to relearn that, where it's like, It was like learning how to ride a bike again. But it's like my first rhymes after 10 years were corny as fuck. And like, they were just not good enough. I tried to do a song with my man Concept to help me get out of the funk by getting me rapping again. And I was just like, it ain't cutting. And I'm like, it ain't going to cut it on an Esoteric song. Yeah. So by committing myself financially and just, I guess, pride to some degree, I just said, this is going to happen, whether it's a month, a year, or 2 years. And I would say within a few years, I'm now a better rapper than I ever was before. Like, I learned a lot just by listening for 10 years and thinking I'd never rap again.
It's kind of like I like what you said about like putting that investment in, like getting skin in the game is kind of what I've heard it be called, is where you gotta, in order to hold yourself accountable, you gotta do things like that and then watch it come to fruition over time. I think that's super great because I think it goes to show that like you can take that time off, but as long as you come back with the right mindset and the right attitude, you'll get back. You got to kind of resharpen your tools a little bit. So it sounds like for you, that's exactly what that was.
Always resharpening my tools. Yeah. I happen to be playing with the pocket knife.
Perfect.
But for me, it was also like, say you were to buy like a weight bench, and it's like, it's going to go up to the, you know, small amount of weight to a heavy amount of weight.
Yeah.
Eventually, you probably want to lift that heaviest weight. And to me, that's what that Esoteric song was to me. I'm like, all right, well, like, I bought that heavy weight. I'm not ready to lift it yet, but I'm going to keep practicing until like I'm strong enough to lift it. And that seemed to have worked. It's like, you know, the song hasn't come out. I haven't been given any Grammys yet. And, you know, no one's like putting me on the source and giving me five mics, but it's like, I feel like I can stand next to him on a song. And that to me, I've already won. You know,
And knowing like when is the right opportunity to do those things as well. Cause I think a lot of people will rush into certain opportunities. They might not be ready for it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So to be able to know when it's the right time to do it, I think is even more important. And I feel like the older you get, the more you understand that as well, which is super
like
great.
There's very little point to spending money on a big name feature if you can't hold yourself on stage, if you can't like hold your own on stage. It's like sort of like you need to already like, it's like there's no, you need to already have some skills worked up, you know?
Yeah.
And to actually like use it as a launch pad.
Yeah. Totally agree. Plus, I feel like if those people heard a trash verse that they were associated with, they probably wouldn't be too happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
almost everybody I hit up asks you for stuff.
Yeah.
To be like, can I hear your stuff first? Because like they don't want to.
They got to keep the brand integrity there. You know what I mean? Yeah. So 100%.
Yeah, I've definitely seen some artists who didn't do that, who just took a song with everybody, and it's like that. It definitely did devalue their brand to some extent.
Absolutely. Guess it just depends on how they look at it at the end of the day, but. I agree with that 100%.
I mean, a lot of rappers can be out there selling verses for $100 and sell, like, you know, named rappers and like sell a lot of them. But eventually, it's like, it's really one of those games where the one person paying you $1,000, you're gonna do a lot less worse work. It's gonna be a lot better for your brand to have less of these songs out there, and it's, you know, so it's just having the, you know, ability to really, you know, hold out for that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious for you, man, because how do you, I know you're a big fan of like a lot of underground artists in hip hop, especially. Do you have a viewpoint on the underground versus like mainstream rap scene? Like, because I know that's very like debated online, especially is like, there's a lot of, I know people that I worked with too, that they're only underground. They consider themselves underground artists and they only support quote unquote underground artists. They don't even care about any mainstream rap at all. So, like, how do you view that? Do you care? Or you're just like, if the music's good, that's what I care about as a listener?
I remember distinctly, like, I used to be big into being underground versus mainstream. Mm-hmm. And I remember distinctly, like, I was with some friends from film school. We were driving up to Buffalo. I drove from Boston to New York City to pick them up and up to Buffalo to shoot a documentary that never got released. And it was the first time we heard Get Rich or Die Trying by 50 Cent. And that album had been hyped up a lot. And, like I don't know whether I just bought into the hype, but I'm like, this dude's going to be the next Tupac. He's going to be the next Biggie. And, like, I had heard How to Rob, like, in a few songs. I'm like, this guy's going to be amazing. And when I heard that album, all I felt was like, oh, no, this was marketing. This was, like, this album doesn't have what Biggie and Tupac has. Like, it doesn't feel as authentic.
Hmm.
And that's the moment where I was like, oh, this is just sort of marketing. This isn't really music. Fast forward to now, I think that album's like amazing. And like, I think I grew up a little bit where I realized that, okay, like there is, like there's been a lot of acts like that for me. Like Cam'ron was another one that I only in the past like 5 years that I really realized how dope he is. And there's been, and like even like Lil Wayne, I've never really gotten into, but somebody has shown me some tracks of his that are really, I'm like, oh, sweet. Like, I guess I, and it's like, I think I have too many times sold people short or made too quick of an impression that I don't really do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but one thing I will say though is like, when you listen to a lot of new hip hop that doesn't really have drums and stuff like that, I always have to put that into context where it's like, okay, I can watch, like if I watch like a documentary about people doing mumble rap, it makes a lot of sense. It doesn't really appeal to me when I'm listening to just songs through the headphones. Like it doesn't, but it's like, I get it, but it doesn't. So that I kind of, it's like, it's just, it's barely in the same genre as rap. It's its own thing.
Exactly. And I really feel I had to get to the point myself, too, because I think I did that a lot of like, I would see something that a lot of people were messing with or talking about. And I would just be the first to be like that. I'm not messing with that because everybody else is messing with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I had to be like, well, it really doesn't matter about that, because like music is just about personal taste at the end of the day, whether it's popular or underground or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Shaming.
Yeah, exactly. So like you got to get to the point where it's like, you know, you just like what you like, the other person, they like what they like. Obviously, the internet will never agree with that take, because there's always got to be arguments
you,
and stuff.
I'm not ashamed to admit this. Two of the songs that are at the top of my Spotify top five are like Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus. It's always a good time to put that on. And this year, it was the Coi Leray song Players, which I fucking love. Like, I must listen to that. And it's like, that's like about as mainstream of a hip-hop song as you can possibly get. Like, her father owned the source. Like, it's,
Exactly. I appreciate your input on that, because like I said, I have even friends still today that it's like they renounce anything considered mainstream, like period, end of the day. So it just kind of is what it is. But
a good song is a good song, and it's like, this part of it too is like, okay, it's really easy for me to be able to say 50 Cent sucks and everybody else loves him, and then turn around 20 years later and say he's great when he's not as hot as he was. So it's like, for me, there's a little bit of like, I have to kind of own up to that, where it's like I'm kind of being like, I don't know, I guess gatekeeper is not the wrong thing. But it's like, if you know that person that shits on everything popular and then loves everything that's fun, you know. Well, actually, actually, 50 Cent's really dope. You know, just don't listen to me when I was 21.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm trying to tell you that he's not Aesop Rock. It's like, what the fuck's wrong with me?
And it's crazy that the internet made it just more prevalent, too, because people like that are everywhere now. But, you know, it just kind of is what it is. And we all have our moments,
I
think.
The craziest thing that ever happened in hip-hop was, do you remember 50 Cent and Kanye dropping on the same day? And they were getting people to buy multiple copies of their albums so they'd win.
That was the...
That was the moment music died. Yeah. It was just dumb for me. Just like...
That was, I think it was, what, Graduation and Curtis, the albums?
I think so.
07. Yeah. That was, like, right when I started getting into hip-hop. So.
Seven.
Yeah. That was a while ago, man. I was going to say, I was super young still. I was 10, but I do remember that for sure.
Yeah.
So, a lot of moments,
yeah, man,
though.
I bought Graduation, and I was on Team Kanye because I was still hating on 50 Cent. And now I'll tell you, I'm hating on Kanye, so, you know. I don't know what he's going to do to himself, but he's got a long walk back to my good side.
Yeah, and that's a whole other discussion because we could go on for days on that one. But I definitely want to touch on the podcast because I know we mentioned it earlier in the episode. You know, how did you initially get the idea to create the show, start interviewing artists? Obviously, I first saw you when you interviewed King Shamps, who we both know. So, like, where did that whole concept come from, and talk more about that?
It once again came from fear. Me trying to conquer some sort of fear. Well, there was two things. One is that I mentioned before, I'm working on this album, or is it done? My album, Drinking Songs for Children, which drops, I think I'm making a movie to go with it. So I'm making a full-length movie to go with this thing where it's like whatever. I'll have plenty to say about it in time to come. But like, and I realized I can't just drop this out of nowhere. I have to actually have some sort of a presence online. It's like nobody knows what I'm mixing up in this little office here. I need to have some connection with the real world, which I've been lacking for a really long time. I've been in a relationship for 11 years. Our world got very small. It ended, and I decided I wanted to make my world bigger again. So for me, it was about sort of making contact with people and just meeting new people and connections. And just, you know, I've got to talk to people I never thought I would have. And now we just chat about bullshit. And, you know, it's lots of good connections there. The other part is that, like, I originally planned on doing this whole podcast under a space helmet. And I wish I had the helmet with me, but it's down in the basement. Like, so I have this character, Ox the Astronaut, that I invented with in correlation with Concept the Astronaut, who's my friend in Texas, who I designed it as for his album covers, but it became my full-time character. And the whole movie was going to be different versions of Ox, but you'd never see my face. It would be different outfits. And eventually I'm just like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I was kind of doing it because I want to be able to separate my professional life from my personal life.
Yeah.
But I just looked like a chode. I was like looking at this footage and I'm like, this is not like, no one's going to want to see somebody who you can't see their mouth rap for like 45 minutes. It's so like, and but the idea is the whole podcast was going to be that way. I was going to do all the interviews under a helmet. And it's like, I forgot about that till like 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, if I had committed myself to that, I'd be fucking miserable right now. What about that episode where I sheepishly take the helmet off and admit how stupid it was? So I'm so glad I didn't do that. But part of the reason I was doing that is because I didn't feel comfortable being me, like the real me out on the internet in the way that you kind of have to be to do this stuff. But like, I eventually realized that like, if I can't do that, like in the same way I said that you shouldn't buy a verse from a big name rapper if you can't knock up from getting on stage, I'm like, I have no business trying to put like a movie out or trying to put this album out with these, you know, artists if I'm not comfortable just being able to talk like this or like interview people. And like, and now it used to be I just wouldn't talk to people, but now I'll talk to anybody. Like, it's helped me in my professional area, my professional work. Like, I feel like I'm better spoken. And even, like, little things. Like, now that I have Premiere Pro, like, transcribe all the episodes during the editing process, I see that my words are more often misinterpreted by the program than my guests, which tell me that I need to work on my pronunciation of my words as I obviously doing it now, I'm saying it, but it's like you get all these little things like that that add up to just an improved overall package of whatever brand this nitwit is.
Hey there, hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I just wanted to take a quick minute out to let you know about a couple different ways that you can support the podcast. One of the ways is by clicking that support the podcast button within your streaming platform. That is if you want to be a monthly supporter of the show. You can contribute either 99 cents, $5, or $10 a month. So that's the first way, and that's the more traditional way that we've had now for the last couple years. The other method that we actually just recently introduced is from our good friends over at Ko-fi. Coffee is a virtual tip jar. We have set our limit to a minimum of $10, but you can go make one-time, one-off donations. So if you visit coffee.com/the Proven Knowledge Podcast, you'll be able to donate. And all these different forms of donation go towards getting new guests every single week, getting potential sponsors on board to do giveaways, and overall just making the show better for you guys. So if you want to do that coffee link, it's ko-fi.com/the Proven Knowledge Podcast. Otherwise, again, look for that support the podcast button in your streaming platform if you'd like to be a monthly supporter. And I just want to say thank you guys for your contributions. And without further ado, let's get back into the episode. Man, I gotta say, I completely agree with that as far as like how I view me and my platform as well, because I think it started where I still would consider myself introverted, which I think I mentioned this on your show. It's like, I think when you do these things and you're talking with like-minded individuals, though, it's a lot easier to talk about these things, you know what I mean? I think you said on your show about how, you know, if you went up to a stranger and you just asked them, like, let's talk, you know what I mean? You'd probably be like, who are you? I don't want to talk to you. But then when we get this format and we're like, we're going to talk about music, we're going to talk about you as an artist, it becomes easier for the guest, but it becomes easier for you as the host too. And that's, I think that's what we overlook. But then like, you'll look back in a few years and you'll see all the progress that you made in your own life. And you're like, wow, now I feel better about doing these other things in even my personal life. So I definitely feel that 100% and just that journey to be able to, you know, see that self-improvement. I think that's an even more fulfilling part than just being able to help others sometimes. You know what I mean?
There's another thing, too, that I kind of refer to as, like, village idiot syndrome. Whereas, like, my entire life, like, I made friends, like, some friends everywhere I went. Like, I had trouble, like, making friends when I was younger, like, real friends. Because I always feel like I didn't really know anybody. Nobody was like me. I was different and obviously different, but not any sort of way that seemed cool until I got a lot older. And so, eventually, you know, I grew up in a small town. I never meet anybody like me. And then, like, I realized as I started doing the podcast, oh, there's another village idiot like me in most villages out there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm realizing that there may not have been anybody in my town like me, but, like, I'm finding people in, like, Alaska that, like, just by doing a little bit of Instagram research and going, that just seems like he might be like me, and we get there. And it's like, you're making a connection that, even though it's mostly online, but it turns into an artistic collaboration. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be, like, it's... I'm having a better artistic collaboration with people I met on the internet than in a lot of cases people I've known in real life my whole life.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's because I'm finding my fellow village idiots. And it's like, you know, and we find that we work well together and there's a connection that we just, numerically speaking, I'm not meeting enough people to find somebody like that. I got them from down on the internet. So.
Yeah. I feel like it's the Spider-Man meme, you know what I mean? Where you're just pointing at one another. Yes. You're like, hey, he's like me, exactly. You know? So yeah. 100% agree with that one, man. So outside of the, you know, podcast, outside of music, let's say recently, last few months, or maybe just this past year, you know, what do you think you've been doing to recharge your creative battery, kind of take some time away? Could be other hobbies, could be just things you're doing on the day to day to kind of take a break, come back, feel good about creating, moving forward. What are some of those things for you?
All right. So it's funny you mentioned that because, so for me, what really recharges my batteries artistically is doing stuff for other people. Like just being like going out of my way to like, you know, like if I see an artist who could use a good flyer, just helping them out. And like by taking the focus off of me and putting it on them, oftentimes their requirements force me to go outside of my comfort zone of what I'm doing. And I have to learn something new. And that often gives me that creative thing back. So on the flip side of that, I've been kind of doing too much of that, and I sort of told everybody at the end of 2023, which is now only a couple weeks away, that I have to focus completely on my own stuff. So now I've been spending the past month really just doing stuff for other people and even stuff for gifts for Christmas and things like that. So it's like it's really hard for me to stop completely because it's like then I just don't know what to do with myself. So it's trying to like rechannel that energy into something that is probably more for somebody else than it is for me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just the way life works, it always seems to just lead to happiness and positive.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it for me.
Well, I definitely commend you on that, man. And I think that's important too, because you got to find ways to say no sometimes, because that's a big thing. Bad. And then like giving more to yourself at the end of the day is still always very important. And finding balance too. you definitely want to be able to do both, and they're both very important. So, but I definitely commend you on that. I think that's super vital, super important.
It's wild because like someone offered me to produce their podcast, and it was if you told me 20 years ago this person wanted to be an interviewer, run and produce their podcast, like I would have been like, of course I would say yes. Like, how much do I have to pay to do that? And I was just like, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
And didn't think twice about it. And like, obviously I'm talking about it now, so I did, but like, it's just at a certain point you realize you have to take some control over your own time. And I know you're really good at scheduling. That actually, when we talked, that really inspired me just about, you know, it sounded like you had a much better grip of what could be done in a week than I do. Because mine is more fantastical and not grounded in reality. And talking to you made me rethink about how important reality is sometimes.
And even being able to set the schedule and just keep the schedule can be difficult. I think it's just everybody has to figure out what works for them too. And I don't even look at anybody else's process as like bad or whatever. I just kind of look at it as like, if it's beautiful chaos and it works, like, by all means, you got to do that. You know what I mean?
The thing that I realized over my process is it, and I told this my boss this before sometimes, like, my process works almost every day, but unfortunately once every 6 months I have to have a total meltdown. My process assumes that not everything's gonna go wrong at once, but about once every 6 months it does, and I'm just like, holy shit, this is the day that I need to just curl up in a corner. But it's like, then I'm back to normal the next day, but I'm like, I couldn't, if I had to re-engineer my entire life but not having those 2 days a year that are like that, it would suck in a different
place. Yeah. I think the good thing is you always come out of it, you know what I mean? Even if you hit the lows, so you're like, you're always going to come. You're like, you're so low, you can only go up from here, you know what I mean? So
every day I break my previous record for most consecutive days being alive, so, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you got to look at it, honestly.
How do you find, like, do you find that when you have guests that people are usually pretty respectful of your time? And because I know it's important to you and it's very important to me, I try to be very respectful of people's time. Do you find that guests are usually like that, or is it kind of a mixed bag?
I mean, for the most part, I've been lucky to have guests that understand, like, you know, just common courtesy, I guess is what you would call it. But I have had people that, you know, are not great, or that just, like, they didn't respond back, or they just missed the time, or they just didn't, you know, I don't know. But it's just, you got to kind of take it like case by case. Everybody's different. But for the most part, I've been lucky. So I would have to say that, yeah, for the most part, they've respected it. So
what I've started telling people in the beginning is, when I first started talking to people, is look, there's a million reasons not to do a podcast. There's probably a trillion reasons not to do my podcast. Any of those reasons I can imagine in my head and say, yeah, that's a good one. So you have to tell me one. Even if you stop responding, it's fine, because I'm just like, look, I get it. There's tons of reasons not to do this. Don't feel bad. And then usually it kind of goes well from there. Because I found, like, just being like, the one thing I think people hate is, like, so many people can be so pestering. And they can just be so, like, it's like, you don't know who this person is. It's like, it's almost like on Tinder when someone's too eager. It's like, you have to sort of just be like, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah. You know? It's like giving a disclaimer beforehand, kind of a warning, like, hey, just be mindful of my time. I'll be mindful of yours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I got to start doing that myself then, I guess.
Maybe that'll weed them out. It's hard. It's hard, too. It's like, you know, then some people, you realize they've never thought about being on Zoom until, like, the second they have to go, like, well, I have to download a program. That's how things work, you know.
They start freaking out a couple minutes before the show. It's like, calm down. Yeah. We'll get through this, I swear.
Or someone who's like, I had this happen the other day, where someone who I know has watched, like, every story on, like, every Instagram I post up for the past year was like, oh, you have a podcast? I'm like, you've looked at 200 stories where I've talked about it in the past year. So, like, yeah.
They're just mindlessly scrolling through, apparently, then.
I know.
Not paying attention, but.
It's funny, though. But
absolutely. Yeah. Well, we got a few more questions here. I do want to know, because you just mentioned, you know, the project you're working on and the other things you have planned. By the time this episode drops, it'll be 2024. So what do you think are, like, the big goals, big three, or maybe just a big one goal that you have for the year that you're looking to accomplish?
Well, all right, I got a couple of them here. One, I'll just mention, I just dropped an album with my man Pilsy Beats, Quiet Life, Loud Friends. It's EP is available on my website, soma79.com/quietlifedadfriends, and all over Spotify, all that stuff too. Got some appearances by Copyright, Honest, The Grease God, Wordplay to Flyest MC, Jay Sinatra, I think that's it. And so that was the first EP in the series. I'm doing two with Pilsy. The second one's called You're Scaring the Ducks. And that's the one we're working on right now. The idea is that when they're done, we're going to press up vinyl with one on one side and one on the other. So I'm starting to look into that. You're Scaring the Ducks is going to be dope. It's got Elza on it, Percy P. They're both in the title track. Rex, I think Mac Leaf. I have a song with Mac Leaf. I don't know if anyone that or something else. Or an unorthodox Copyright. So other star-studded event. And I'm kind of waiting on one of those features. It's sort of the person's had some kind of stuff go on in their life, and they're just a little behind on it. So that's kind of determining when it's going to come out, because I'm not going to drop it unless that's on there. But so the goal is, once that's done, we're going to press it up like vinyl. On vinyl. I'm also working on a project with my man Rick Seaholm, and he's somebody who was on my podcast. He's a really amazing person. I've known him my entire life, but we've really kind of gotten back in touch the past few months. And he's a really amazing musician. He's only a couple years older than me. He's battling Parkinson's, and he has been since he's around 42 or even younger, and that's really young to get Parkinson's. And it's really, he's one of the kindest people I've ever met, and he's really just showed me how incredible life can be, I guess is the way I put it. And we're making an album together. We're going to call it The Platinum Rule. And it's going to be about how the golden rule is treat others how you want to be treated. But I think the platinum rule is treat people how they want to be treated. Because it's like, then you take the focus off of you and put it onto them. And then you're kind of, you know, not doing it from your own perspective. And so the album is going to be loosely based around different ways of playing with that concept. Hmm. Just the opportunity to work with Rick, who's so musically talented, just an amazing human being, I'm very much looking forward to. So I'm going to start writing all this stuff, those albums, over my vacation over Christmas. And then in the background, I'm finishing up my film, Drinking Songs for Children. And hopefully I'll get it done this year. I plan on dropping the video for Doomsday for a Man of Steel in the summer. And that's with Aztec, Cool Keith, and Esoteric from Czarface. I'm working on a video before I mentioned for that. That's got like kind of Muppety stuff and some other stuff going on. And we're hoping to shoot that in the next month or so and get that out in the summer. So, and that's the first real, that's the beginning of the launch of this, the Drinking Songs for Children movie and film. And then hopefully, what I'm learning now is that you want to that releasing singles one at a time is better than releasing a whole album in terms of publicity. So now I'm regauging my strategy around doing that and just trying to maximize and learn more about the promotion. Because, you know, so that's really my goal, and just to get better and just, you know, hopefully work with some cool artists. And it looks like I might have a cool opportunity to go perform in Alaska next summer, which I can't say too much about yet, but it's still in the works. But it sounds like there may be a show out there with a really cool act that I may be opening for. And that I'm actually very much looking forward to. So.
Nice, man. Well, it sounds like you got a lot of consistent releases coming up. You're going to have a big year, I think. So, definitely early congrats on all of it, man. I'm excited to see what you do and keeping up with the podcast and everything as well. So, last few questions here. These are ones I ask on every episode. Yep. First one is, if you could go back 10 years ago, maybe give yourself a piece of advice, maybe not change anything at all, what do you think you would do?
I would say that tell myself that if you don't change, things are not going to change. And that, because I think if I go back 10 years ago, there was 5 years after that where I mulled over the same problems and didn't do anything about them. And, you know, I don't really, it's like, it makes you the person you are today. But, you know, I spent too much time waiting and not enough time doing.
More action.
And now my problem's the opposite.
Yeah.
I spent too much time doing and not enough time slowing down.
Yeah. You know? Feel that. And if we flip it, though, and we say 10 years from now, where do you think you envision the music, the podcast, life in general?
It's interesting because I don't like to talk about my professional life too much because, like, I work for a company that is fairly well known in the media space, and I don't want to misconstrue speaking about them as me speaking on their behalf. And I absolutely love the company I work for and the job and what we do in the world and all that stuff. So, for me, I found a place that I work from home from there all the time. I absolutely love it. I love the people, and I love the mission of what we do. So it would be hard for me to ever give up anything like that. So it's really, for me, what I'm doing is more about hobbyist obvious at a high level unless a really great opportunity comes around. And what I was thinking is, if I get this film done and it's the way I want it to be, Adult Swim is really what's on my radar. Where it's like, if I can at least get a meeting with them and say, hey, this, I envision this being something of at least equal quality to some of the stuff they put on the air, which, you know, is just people moving action figures. So it's like, it's not. So for me, that's sort of, if I can start having meetings like that, I start thinking about if I want my life to change a lot or not. And I think it's possible to have those meetings as long as, you know, because it's not that hard to get a meeting, you know, it depends what happens with it. So that's sort of the goal, because I don't really want to change my life. I think a lot of people who are into music are looking for it as a way to change their life, but I actually love my life. Like, I feel so grateful for everything I have, and my job isn't a hindrance, it's a help to my life. And what I do in this is a help to my job, and it's like, I can't ask for anything, you know?
That's all, and hopefully you get that meeting. I'm gonna try to get it. Yeah, I was gonna say, hopefully that comes, man, because that would be super awesome, for sure.
Yeah, and the whole idea too is like, I want to be able to help other people because I get a lot of enjoyment out of that as well. Mm-hmm. I think that becomes a big part of it. Where it's like, I'm getting older. It's like, you know, I'm 40. I'll be 45 next year. It's like a lot of the enjoyment comes from working with the younger people, especially the ones that show that they really love hip hop. Mm-hmm. Like people like Wordplay, who's 25 and knows shit about stuff from 80s rappers that I don't even know. It's like, I love shit like that. It gets
me
excited.
Yeah. That's goes back to what we said earlier about meeting the like-minded people. So,
exactly.
Yeah, man. And do you have any final words of wisdom today for the listeners?
I'm going to go back to the platinum rule of treat people the way they want to be treated. Like, that's in reverse of the way you want to be treated. It's like, or at least start thinking about things a little in that mindset if possible, because I think we're kind of heading towards a direction. This 2024 scares the fuck out of me for politically and all that stuff. And I think it's going to be a make or break year for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I think as individuals, as we often feel there's very little we can do in those situations. But what I like to tell people is just try to see things from other people's perspective and understand that, like, there's more to people than the words that come out of their mouth. A lot of people, especially this day and age, we're being expected to absorb way more than anyone else in the history of the billions or millions or thousands, if you believe in certain religions, of years of humanity. So take it easy on each other. Mm. And don't jump down to people's throat. Treat people online the way you treat them in real life. And also at the same time, get a tough fucking skin. Because I think we all have to toughen up a little, and we all have to toughen up ourselves to some degree and soften up on others and just find a way back to some humanity. Because when all shit may go south, someone's going to have to be there and pick up the pieces and have a kind heart to try to do it. And the more of us there are, the better.
Yeah. So. Love that, man. And seeing it from all sides, I love that part as well. So that's super great. And man, I got to say, you know, thank you again for being on the show. You know, thank you again for having me on your show, man. That was a great time, and we'll have to do this again soon, man. We'll have to stay in touch, because I know what you're doing is super awesome, and I'm a fan of your platform and everything you got going, so congrats, man. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. That was episode 188. We'll be back this time next week. As always, hit the support button on your podcast streaming platform if you'd like to send any funds, and feel free to leave us that 5-star rating if you enjoyed today's episode. So we'll see you then. Thanks, everyone.